So the holiday season is upon us. And if you're like me, you probably have a million things you have to do. So many errands to run and so much traffic. So if you live anywhere around Puget Sound, you know what I mean. So the other day I was in downtown Seattle and it took me literally like half an hour to go four blocks. I eventually just abandoned my car. I just parked it and I walked the rest of the way to where I was going. I just gave up. But what do you do when you're on the freeway and traffic is so bad, it's stop and go? What are your options? Sometimes you see that occasional driver changing lanes back and forth, trying to beat the traffic. You know that guy, right? But does that make a difference? Can drivers actually get to their destination faster by weaving in and out of lanes? That's a question we're going to tackle on today's episode. From KUOW in Seattle, this is Sound Cues, a podcast fueled by listener curiosity. I'm your host, Deborah Wong. So what are the benefits and the drawbacks of lane changing? Reporter David Hyde hit the road to get the answer.
Is traffic weaving worth it? University of Washington traffic expert Mark Hollenbeck says he can't answer that question. No researcher has looked at lane changing under real highway conditions. What he can say...
Weaving is disruptive. Disruption reduces efficiency. Reductions in efficiency cause congestion. So we don't like weaving.
But Hollenbeck admits that sometimes you might get there a little faster by weaving, especially if you're willing to be a jerk. So let's find out. I'm in my car about to get on I-5, headed south into heavy Seattle traffic. In another car is Mariah St. Clair. She's a listener who wrote in and asked us to answer this question. Does traffic weaving work? So today, Mariah's headed to work downtown about 6 miles away. And for this unscientific experiment, she's going to pick a lane and stick with it. And I'm going to change lanes a bit, and we'll see who gets there faster.
It's pretty backed up, as usual.
I'm a car behind Mariah, so she's got a head start.
I like to stay in this lane so that mostly I just can keep going. So it's kind of slow and steady wins the race is my plan.
Okay, I'm weaving. Okay, I'm weaving again. There's a man in a blue Prius behind me right now, and he's shaking his head and making a weaving symbol with his hand, like his hand is like a fish swimming through the water, and he's shaking his head like, you idiot. Stop weaving. The thing is, he was right. At that point, after weaving in and out of traffic, I was way behind Mariah. So why did it seem like I would get there way ahead of her by changing lanes? Dr. Donald Redelmeyer has studied that. And his answer takes us back to our original question, is traffic weaving worth it?
Under congested roadways, our own eyes start to play tricks on us. It makes it seem that the next lane is going faster than the lane we're in right now, even though all the lanes have the same average speed. And by the way, that illusion holds for every driver on the roadway.
Redelmeyer is a Canadian science researcher and co-author of a study of traffic weaving. And he wanted to know, do drivers make good decisions about changing lanes? The researchers had subjects look at computer simulations because it would be unethical to ask drivers to really change lanes on a real highway for an experiment. And they found out that most people believed that the next lane was going faster, even though it wasn't. But obviously, sometimes you've got to weave.
Of course you've got to change lanes. You'd be a bozo not to do it.
The problem is that drivers overestimate the benefits of changing lanes. And that puts you and everyone else on the highway at risk. Because when you change lanes, Redelmeyer says, you're roughly 3 times as likely to get into an accident compared to staying in your lane.
3 times as likely to get into an accident? Wow. Well, think about that for a minute. And when we come back, we'll see who makes it to their destination first. Listener Mariah St. Clair or our lane changer, David Hyde.
Back to the end of our Seattle traffic experiment, I'm meeting Mariah at her parking garage near Pioneer Square in downtown Seattle.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Where are you?
I just made it to the garage. How about you?
Oh, I am at 2nd and Columbia.
You're kidding! I was convinced I was so far behind.
Nope, I'm just coming to the stoplight now, so I'll be there in just a sec.
So after all the stress of moving between lanes, I got there under a minute faster. I put myself and other drivers at risk by changing lanes when I didn't have to, and there's the shame. Other drivers now know me as a weaver.
Oh, the shame, the shame. Sound Cues reporter David Hyde. Okay, we have a few more traffic-related questions that we want to tackle, and so we invited Mark Hollenbach, who we heard from in David's piece, back into the studio. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how are you?
So you are the director of the Washington State Transportation Center. You're kind of our go-to guy. You're like our traffic guru, so thanks for coming back in.
No problem. Happy to help.
So the holiday season is upon us. I always get the sense that there's more traffic around the holidays. Is that in fact true?
That is in fact true because people are doing all these extra trips. They're going out for parties where they would have stayed home for dinner. They're going out to see the lights. They're going out to shop. They're going out to do a lot of other things where normally, particularly that afternoon, early evening, they would be home. So there's all that extra travel does put extra traffic on the roads.
So do you have any advice for people who are out there having to drive around during the holiday season?
Well, a lot of that has to do with where you're going and when you're going. So if you have the opportunity to take transit. The reason is you get to relax and check in on your email and your phone and your news feeds and do all those other things. So you're productive. That's a good thing. Two, you're not adding to the congestion. That's great. Three, you can have an extra beer or an extra glass of wine and not worry about it and not be a threat to the rest of the world. So those things are absolutely great.
Okay. What if you have to drive?
So the question is, can you share that ride? Can you pick up your friends and go to the third friend's house and reduce the number of cars? Absolutely do that. Don't go home at the usual time. Take a break and have a light dinner downtown and do your shopping on Wednesday afternoon when the restaurants will be thrilled and you'll get a table on a Wednesday afternoon instead of Friday. And you will have a great time. And then when you're ready to go home at 7:30 or 8, the traffic will have died down and life will be sweet and you'll get home much earlier and easier and with less congestion. And everybody else will be happy to use the space in the freeway that you didn't use.
So just a little bit of planning, a little bit of advanced planning.
A little advanced planning will go a long ways towards making your trip better. In transportation, we call it trip chaining. Rather than making 17 separate trips, see if you can tag them all together in order to limit how much you drive or how often you have to move your vehicle.
So you've given us strategies for avoiding traffic, which is probably the best advice you can give because traffic is pretty awful these days. What about advice to just be a better citizen and be a better motorist and help your fellow motorist on the road? Like, is there any way that we should be driving that we're not driving right now?
The easy answer there is get the heck off your blankety blank phone.
Right.
Whether that is Bluetooth on your head or whether it's in your hand and you're looking at it or worse yet, you're texting someone, just hang the dang thing up. Phone usage is bad for multiple reasons. The basic science behind it says being on your phone, even on a Bluetooth, essentially makes you drunk in terms of the likelihood of your being in a crash. Mm. Because your brain is distracted, it is doing other things. And a good friend of mine who is a neurologist says brains actually can only do one thing at a time. They don't really multitask. They flip back and forth between tasks. So when you are listening on that phone, you are not actively driving, which means you're slow to react to things. So it's a danger to you and you're a danger to everyone else just being on the phone.
And it makes traffic worse as well? In what way?
So when you are distracted, and this is particularly true, and everybody sees it, when you are on your phone, you're driving on I-5 and suddenly somebody is going 45, mm-hmm. right? And you're thinking, why is this fool going 45? Mm-hmm. And you drive around, what it is that they are
they're
on their
phone. Yeah.
Right? And they're on their phone and they're looking down. So when you look down, when you text, you're three times as likely to have an accident. What happens is your eyes are down. You've added a minimum of 2 more seconds because your eyes have to look up and refocus to your reaction time. People tend to, because they realize they're doing bad things, they give extra space, which disrupts traffic flow. Pretty soon, because they're not paying attention to what they're driving too slowly. Mm-hmm. Because they're driving slowly, they disrupt and everybody passes around them, which creates weaving, which creates congestion around you. Nothing good comes from being on your phone while you're driving.
Okay, tips for driving safely over the holidays. Mark, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Mark Hollenbach is the director for the Washington State Transportation Center. This story was inspired by a question from listener Mariah St. Clair. If you have a question about Seattle or our region, head on over to our website, kuow.org/soundcues, and drop us a note. Your question might be featured in a future episode. Sound Cues is a production of KUOW in Seattle. Matt Martin is our producer. Gil Agutter and Jim Gates are our editors. Our production team includes Anna Boyko-Wyrock, David Hyde, Jill Jackson, and Brendan Sweeney. Michael Parker composed our theme music. I'm your host, Deborah Wong. Thanks for listening.